Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the CONCACAF Champions League Review Show.
And good evening, everyone, and welcome to the special edition once again of the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show. This is the fourth round review show of the 2014-15 CONCACAF Champions League as we get set to talk about these past matches involving MLS as well as Liga MX side as we talk about everything going on here in the world of CONCACAF soccer. And once again, the matches were interesting. While there were some performances that were dominant, some performances actually were good enough in a loss because of the goal difference. And, of course, if you thought about the teams that did win but did not perform well enough to add on to their total, well, that is the one part of concern that you probably have. So depending on which sides are going on and who you're supporting, you just have to say that it's just not good enough. It's just not good enough at all for your sides, depending on how late in the game we are right now with these Champions League matches. And, of course, let's not forget round five will be next week, and then round six will be at the final end during at the end of the MLS regular season. And we'll see where some of the clubs you support are in certain positions. So it should be very interesting to see what's going to happen towards the tail end of these group stage games involving the CONCACAF Champions League, especially those sides in Major League Soccer, as well as, let's also say, those Liga MX sides, because it really should be interesting to see what's going to happen here. But I got to say that when you're looking at these teams, and obviously some of these little minnows are just not getting the opportunity to advance into how they should advance, all I can say is that, well, let's just say that, you know, good try. Obviously, you're trying to be big here if you can. And the shame of it all is that for some of these teams, it's just not good enough for them to get through. All I can say is you gave it your best shot. That's all you can really hope for. And, hey, why not? You gave it your best shot. That's all that matters. And you know what? Good for them. But once again, it's a situation where the Liga MX teams are strong. The MLS teams are strong. Maybe except for one that's up in Canada right now, but we'll get into that in a bit. And at the same time, these teams from Costa Rica, they can sneak up on you, and you got to make sure you get through. I mean, let's take a look right now. Obviously, in the standings currently, Pachuca has played one less game than Municipal in España, and it's Pachuca right now that has the advantage in points with 6 and goal difference with plus 7. Sporting Kansas City right now with the victory, advancing to the top of the Group 2 standings. They also have 2 games remaining. Even though Montreal did defeat the Red Bulls, and my good buddy Dominic Tremblay will be joining us a little later on, they do have 3 wins. They have 9 points, but now they put themselves in a position where winning at home, and, you know, obviously it's big when you win at home, but once again, Montreal at home has not been spectacular. Montreal at home has not been that dominant. And the way Montreal plays, and I mean, they should be dominant at home. Obviously, they are during league season. But in the CONCACAF Champions League, in their last four home games, including this last one against the Red Bulls, you know how interesting it is that they've only scored a goal? They've only scored one goal at home. Their big goal total was the 3-2 win on the road against Deportivo FAS on August the 20th. So it's really interesting to see what is going on with the Montreal side that, you know, they have won their Canadian championship and they should be able to do something. You knew that they were going to get drawn with either an MLS side or a Mexican club side, a Liga MX side, but still, it just doesn't seem like it's good enough. And I don't know. We'll see what's going to happen, especially the next game that the Rebels will be playing in their group stage. We'll see what happens there. In other standings, Group 4, Waterhouse, at the moment, is tied on points with DC United, tied on the differential with a plus 2, but they have 7 goals scored, while DC United has 3 goals scored. Now, obviously, this is going to change when DC takes on Taro FC from Panama. But it would be interesting to see, because they're going to get 2 cracks at this. A draw for DC United is good enough to go through, and they'll lead on points. Because we all know Taro has, at the moment, 2 losses, and both are against Waterhouse. They have no points. And wouldn't it be funny if Taro, maybe if they flipped it around, that they beat DC twice? And depending on the goal situation, I mean, right now they're in minus 4. They need to get to a plus 6, and which would mean a plus 2 in the differential to get themselves out of this hole. But the truth of the matter is, right now, DC United, while in second place, and the Jamaican side is in first, even though they've already exhausted all 4 games, Waterhouse can still be knocked out, or, depending on what the tiebreakers are, who knows, could still advance past the group stage into the knockout round. It should be an interesting situation. Olympia, right now, still in first place with 6 points with a plus 5. Portland Timbers, 2 games in hand now because they've already faced Olympia, winning that match. And my good friend Stephen Lenhart will be joining us. Points is 6, goal difference is 5. Olympia is at the moment ahead by a goal on the goal scored. Alpha United, dead in the water. You know they're not going to do anything. Has Cruz Azul fought back with the victory over Chirillo from Panama? Has Cruz Azul found a way to fight back, and yet they still have 1 more match against Aluenza? Because right now, Aluenza has a game in hand, and they have to face Chirillo. So that's an interesting group. We'll see what's happening. Either the Panamanian side goes through, or the Costa Rican side could go through. Cruz Azul could be eliminated. We don't know what's going to happen. It's going to be interesting. Herediano right now leads the group 7 with 7 points, and Leon has 4, but Leon has a game in hand. It's going to be interesting to see what Club Leon will do at home against Herediano. That's, of course, Herediano replacing Belmopan Bandits because their stadium situation was terrible. And to be honest, I feel that's kind of unfair, but that's the rules and how CONCACAF sets this whole thing up. But Club of, you know, you just can't really say anything negative about Bayamon FC coming out of Puerto Rico, because they are trying their best. And you have 2 Goliaths right now that are trampling all over them in 3 games. Twice, Club America has demolished Bayamon, and they upped the ante with 4 more on the road at the baseball stadium converted to a soccer stadium now. They've basically added four more to the onslaught, 16-4 and 2 against by Club America as their leading Group 8 at the moment. Comunicaciones with a game in hand and has to still face Bayamon FC. So the big, big matchup is going to be in October between these two sides. You just don't know what you're going to get yourself into. You just don't know what you're going to get yourself in for. It's going to be very, very interesting. Very, very interesting to see what's going to happen here. And, it's just going to be exciting. It's going to be interesting. And we'll have also John Jagu on talking about the Mexican clubs that are continuing to fight to get to the top spots in their respective groups. But one thing is for sure, it's going to be exciting. I know I can't wait for it. I know it's going to be great. And I really believe that so far we've had some interesting CONCACAF Champions League action. Depends on what's going to happen with those teams that currently have a lead and currently at the top of the groups, what changes are going to happen when those teams are not playing. Because we're going to see a hell of a finish when we get to the end of October. That week in the end of October is going to be very, very interesting. Especially for Montreal, because apparently the yellow card that Marco Davao picked up, that booking has him suspended along with Matteo Ferrari for the final group stage game at Red Bull Arena. Depending on if the Red Bulls win down in El Salvador and score more than two goals at least to tie up the differential, three goals or more to take the lead on differential, but still be behind by 3 points. And then that big final group stage match in group three is going to get very, very interesting because you need more than just 3 points to get through it all. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, great show for you tonight. I'm going to have on Mike Kuhn from Down the Byline on Sporting Kansas City. Dominique Tremblay, my fellow Soccer Newsday writer, will up in Montreal, will be joining me in a taped conversation. Mike Kuhn was also in a taped conversation. Stephen Lenhart over there in Portland on the Timbers victory. John Jagu, once again, helping me out with the Mexican clubs in Liga MX in this competition. My first guest, as always, from our nation's capital and in the vicinity. Of course, it's Robert Hay over in D.C. Robert, how are you, and how's the family?
Hey, Daniel. Everything's well. Thanks for having me on to talk a little D.C. United.
Absolutely not a problem at all. You know, when we talked last time, when Waterhouse was at RFK, and D.C. United got a great goal to start the match. Obviously, Eddie Johnson puts it away to make it 1-0. And Waterhouse was, like, bombing shots very deep and very far away from DC's 18, and DC couldn't add on to the total. What changes do you think Ben Olsen made for this matchup that showed you the confidence that DC, that they were a little unlucky in their first group stage match against Waterhouse?
Well, I think the big thing was the scheduling congestion. DC, you know, at the time of the first game was about to go travel to Kansas City and Los Angeles. And so Ben Olsen had to field a more second and third team lineup just to make sure his players got rotated and he had fresh legs on the field. Because as important as the Champions League is, it's where DC is, it's very important that they try and, you know, get as many points against Eastern Conference competition as possible. So that was the mindset going in to the first match when you were thinking about the matchup against Waterhouse. In this game, there was more time in between the league matches. You know, the DC had the off day prior to this match, so Ben could rotate in some more first team players. So you see players like Bill Hamid, Taylor Kemp, Perry Kitchen in this lineup. that you didn't in the first time around. And of course, Fabian Espíndola was suspended. Received a red card in his last league match. He'll be suspended against Chicago, so he was available for selection. That actually ended up being very fortuitous for DC United and Ben Olsen.
Absolutely. And Fabian Espíndola, obviously, using this great moment to, of course, get suspended in league action, obviously not intentionally. And the video evidence did show it was not intentional. But still, a hell of a first goal by Espíndola in the 38th minute, and then a great flick header by Espíndola in the 50th to really cement this lead for DC. And at the moment, I know they won it by 2-1, but still, those two goals by Espíndola were absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, you know, that first goal was a piece of work. You know, just being able to dispossess the defenders and taking himself with a couple of guys following him. And then, of course, the chip, as you mentioned, was just absolutely world-class. I mean, it's a thing of beauty that you could watch over and over again and should be nominated for goal of the whatever. You know, certainly goal of the week. And, you know, the second goal was also excellent. You know, great cross in by, I want to say, was it Kyle Porter? I can't remember who exactly the cross in was from. You know, he just found space and he put his head on it. You know, it wasn't anything dramatic. It was just very simple. Just headed it past the keeper, who was a little bit flat footed on that. And, you know, that was the two goals. So he's, you know, he's really been a revelation for DC this year. I think coming into the season, you know, there were some expectations of him, but he's far exceeded them for this team. He's been a true leader, especially with the goal scoring. And, you know, this game shows why. He's a consummate professional and a very veteran, smart veteran player. So, yeah, I mean, he's been a godsend for DC.
Yeah, he really has. And, of course, unfortunately, now I don't know if he's going to be used in the game against Taro next week, but obviously you're going to have a suspension with Taylor Kemp. He got double yellow carded in the 70th minute. I'm assuming he said the magic words times two, and the referee had no choice but to say bang, bang, and now you're done.
Well, I think was he he had the sliding tackle in the 70th minute to, what was later called denial of a goal-scoring opportunity.
Uh-huh.
So he's out for the straight red card. I think he will be missing this match. I'm not quite sure. There's been some injuries in DC's lineup, so I'm not quite sure who's going to be available for that for the outside. You know, it all depends on how the rotation looks like. And, of course, you know, the game against Toro, you know, DC United has set itself up very well where it only needs 1 point in the next two matches against a pretty bad team. But, again, this is a game that will be in the middle of two league games, the first one against Chicago, which is an important away game, and then home to Philadelphia. Two games that if you're, you know, serious about trying to make a run at the Supporters Shield, you need to win. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, who's available and who will be on the pitch for the game on the 24th.
Absolutely. Now, obviously, it looks like all DC really needs is a draw to get out of the group stage in Group 4, because Waterhouse has already played all four games. They defeated Taro FC twice, lost to DC United twice. But at the moment, Waterhouse still in that top position because of the goals scored category. Waterhouse has 7, DC United has 3, but obviously all you need is another tick on the differential and you'll be ahead of them. But how tricky can these next two matches get for DC? Because I'm not saying that Taro's going to come out of the blue and start ripping DC out of the blue, but you never know in the world of CONCACAF how these results could pan out.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you factor in the travel and things like that, the fact that DC United is going to be traveling to Panama in between their last two league games of the year, you know, on the heels of a, you know, playoff berth. I think that Ben Olsen's going to try and go for the kill. I don't mean that literally, of course. And sorry if that sounded insensitive. I think he's going to go for all 3 points against Taro in the home match. If he can get it out of the way, then you can do some intense squad rotation in Panama. Because, honestly, it looks like the second team for DC United should be able to handle this team and not get blown out of the water. And should be able to even off a little goal differential in the home match. So it'll be interesting. You know, it's as with the other MLS teams in this competition, you know, the fact that the playoffs are coming up and that we're in the stretch run means there's going to be some interesting lineup choices and decisions made. The good thing for DC is, you know, this is a fairly deep team right now, even with the injuries. The lineup that they threw out there for the last game has some pretty decent, you know, MLS players in there, some guys who can do well in the stage of the competition. And the big news from this match from a DC United perspective, of course, is Chris Pontius got a run out. You know, after being out for so long with his injuries, he played 23 minutes in this match, and, you know, that's a very positive sign for him. So I actually look for him possibly to get a lot of playing time maybe in this upcoming match against Toro, just because I don't quite know if Ben Olsen's ready to throw him into a full MLS match, but a game like that at home is probably a pretty good opportunity for him to get some playing time.
How desperately is DC? Because, let's be honest, they've had a great year, obviously, but, you know, if Chris Pontius is 100% healthy and 100% fit, I mean, this would probably be, you would say, you and Seattle fighting tooth and nail for the Supporters Shield, as well as you're still fighting with Sporting Kansas City for the top spot in the East.
Yeah, and especially with the match against Sporting Kansas City at home, too, coming up on the 3rd. You know, I think the nice thing about the timing of this is the fact that Chris Rolfe is out, so we're replacing one Chris with another, in a sense. And Chris Pontius is going to take some time to get back up to full speed, just with the nature of his injury and how long he was out. He's not going to be fully productive right away, but, you know, he's going to have a chance to play. He's going to have a position to play, and Ben Olsen and the staff can bring him in slowly and get him up to playing speed and then get him to, you know, up to his production where they want it to be. So, you know, it'll be interesting with the games coming up. He'll have a chance to do that, and DC, like I said, is going to have to juggle their roster a little bit. I don't think we're expected to get Chris Rolfe back until basically the end of the season, maybe the beginning of the playoffs. You know, again, one of the things that I've been really impressed with this team is the way that it's been built. You know, they have a lot of good, as I said, professional MLSers who may not be flashy, may not be the sexy names, but they're guys who have been out there and have contributed for different teams, and they know what to do. So that's a big difference than some DC United teams in the past, where it was maybe the starting 11 were good enough and the drop-off was pretty poor.
Yeah, probably so. But still, though, you have to say that this has been a pretty good season, a great bounce-back season for DC United as they continue on to play good. Now the real question comes, what are they going to do in the playoffs? Because we don't know what's going to happen. But at the same time, you got to qualify for the playoffs and try to get into the knockout stages next year. Let me ask you this question, because this is probably the biggest question that you could probably ask Ben Olsen, depending on what the Red Bulls do against Montreal, if they can knock them off and advance into the knockout stage. Because we all know that the clubs that are coming out of Liga MX are always going to be at least 5 to 10 matches in to their seasons before they get to their first leg of the group stage, I mean, of the knockout round in the quarterfinals if they do face an MLS team. Forget about the CBA for a minute. Do you think it's imperative for DC United and any MLS club that will get into the knockout stages to start off in the quarterfinals, maybe to have a couple more preseason games and kind of make them more into, you know, have them match ready and tell their players that think of this as a regulation game, don't think of this as a preseason game?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a good point, especially if you look at a team like a DC United where, you know, I don't really know what the roster is going to look like next year. You have some players getting a little bit older, and you have some players like Abil Hamid who are going to get some serious interest from overseas. Especially if it's a team where there are some new pieces coming in or there are some other pieces that have gone out and need to be replaced. You know, it's a good point. I think that's where these tournaments like the one in Charleston, I'm blanking on the name of the cup right now.
The Carolina Challenge Cup.
Yep, the Carolina Challenge Cup and the one they have down at Disney in Florida. You know, these things are treated like a friendly. Maybe there's a way that we can, you know, the MLS can work with the hosts and the other leagues and make them a little bit more competitive, try and treat them a little bit more like games that matter, even though they're not. Maybe inviting the Champions League teams to play against each other. But you're right. I think that the teams from Mexico and some of these other leagues who've gotten a head start do have an advantage, and that's something that has always been the case. And MLS recognizes that. They just haven't been able to address it very well. So, we'll see. I think the key is just doing some of these tournaments, making them a little bit more competitive, maybe front-loading the schedule a little bit, but then you run into the problem of getting tired legs going into these CONCACAF Champions League games. So it's a delicate balance the league has to do. And, I think your idea of a beefier preseason is the way to go.
Yeah, I have to think so, because it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen, who gets the advancement to the knockout stage, and who they're going to face off against, and what's going to happen. We got some time here real quick.
Cool.
Your opinion of the brand new reboot, the brand new MLS logo, and, of course, the different colors of each of the clubs that will be wearing it on their sleeves next year in 2015.
Well, I'll take it back a little bit further. I think the way that the league has done the MLS Next, I think actually overall has been very good. I like the partnership with FIFA. I like some of the other partnerships. I know some people were confused why they started releasing this information at 5 o'clock in the morning or whenever it was, the morning it came out. I actually think it's a pretty smart idea, because it allows people, when they wake up, when they go to work and start checking their social media and their email, that's one of the first things they see. They start seeing a little bit of buzz on this. So I think that aspect of it has been very good. I like the fact that MLS is sitting there saying, we're ready to rebrand. We're at the point now where we are a more mature league, and we need to step it up and become MLS Next. You know, I like that idea. Based on my business background, I think rebranding is a great thing if you pick the time right. The mistake they made is definitely the logo, though. I like the idea of matching it to the different teams' colors. Intentionally or unintentionally, that kind of reinforces this single entity aspect to it. But anytime you create a logo where you have a first half and a second half, and the second half is empty, yeah, you can sit there and say it's the unknown, it's the promise or whatever. But, you know, there's a reason why it's called, you know, just if you talk to a designer, and that's something that they hate, because it's just wasted space. It's nothingness. It's something that is incomplete. So I think that the league coming out with that logo was a bad idea. I think it's a poor design. Ultimately, logos don't matter for sports leagues. Except for maybe the NBA, because that was based on a player. I couldn't really describe to you MLB's logo right now. It's more the thought process going into it.
A hitter hitting a ball. It's just a hitter hitting
there you
a
go.
Ball. That's it.
There you go. But it's not top of mind, but it's one of those things where it's not the actual object that matters. It's the thought process that went into it is what's important to me. And it's kind of disappointing that their thought process was what it was. And, you know, these are smart guys. MLS is very progressive in terms of how it markets itself. I think they're a lot more progressive than a lot of the other more established leagues, and they take some risk. But I think that was a little too unnecessary risk. I think at the end of the day, a safer logo, if they wanted to get away from the foot kicking the ball, that's fine. But maybe something a little bit safer would have been okay too, and would have allowed people to focus more on the unveiling, the FIFA aspect of things, the press conference, instead of why they hated the logo and altering it to get a laugh out of it.
I agree with that. I don't mind the different colors, and maybe it should have been. Of course, other people are now adding some of their own little photoshopped pieces. Now, I don't know what anyone's done with DC. I have to assume it's the face of the eagle. But, I don't mind it, I guess. I mean, maybe it looks a little blah, but I don't mind it. I think it's fine. I mean, I'm not going to bother nitpicking about it, but this is what MLS is going to get. This is what they're going to receive. So that's all you can do.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to know how much they paid somebody to come up with that design.
5 years old, and no, I'm just joking.
Unfortunately for them, I don't think so.
The rumor has it, Robert, they contacted your daughter.
No.
You know what? She might have come up with something a little bit better, and I wouldn't mind taking that paycheck from them because I know what marketing people charge for these things. It ain't cheap.
All right, Robert, thanks a lot. I'll talk to you next time, I'll talk to you next week, and good luck with the rest of the league season.
Sounds good. Thanks, Daniel.
No problem at all. Robert Hay, you can follow his stuff at Robert Hay Jr. at WordPress.com, as well as World Soccer Talk. So now we're talking about Sporting Kansas City. My buddy Mike Kuhn was not able to come on live tonight. Hopefully we'll have him on next week, talking about a 3-1 victory over Deportivo Saprissa that, strangely enough, they changed their logo or their shield from a purple dragon to a big darkish reddish S for Saprissa. Why they did that, I don't know, but they wanted to change it up a bit, I guess, or be maybe they felt the dragon was a little cartoonish. We don't know what's going on. I don't know. But it was a very important victory against one of the top sides in Costa Rica and a threat to Sporting Kansas City's ability to get out of the group stage. So here is my friend Mike Kuhn talking about the 3-1 victory by Sporting Kansas City over Deportivo Saprissa of Costa Rica.
And once again, this is the CONCACAF Champions League group stage round 4 review show as we go ahead and talk about those clubs once again in MLS and Liga MX. And joining me now all the way over in Kansas City is, of course, my good friend Mike Kuhn from the Down the Byline blog on Sporting Kansas City's victory over Deportivo Saprissa of Costa Rica. Kuhn, thanks again for coming on and welcome back.
No problem. Always a pleasure to join you, Daniel.
Always a pleasure to have you on. So basically, you said that this was the matchup for Sporting Kansas City that they were going to have the toughest of times against. And thankfully, it was at Sporting Park, but still, though, 3-1 victory is pretty good against one of the top sides in Costa Rica.
No, the 3-1 win was very nice. And if it goes back to, if not for one of our traditional struggles of finishing, it probably could have been a lot worse than that with some better finishing in the first half.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely agree with you. I mean, you got yourselves that penalty early. That was converted by Dom Dwyer. Now, you did tell Dom that that doesn't count in the league standings, right?
I did tell him that. I did. It does push him closer to Preki's all-time club record in competitive matches, though. So he'll take that one.
Oh, I bet he will. But I have to say, though, that was a hell of a shot from Juan Bustos in the 28th minute on that little pass he got from his teammate. Boy, I'll tell you, I didn't think Grunenbaum, to be honest, I thought he had a great opportunity to get it, but he didn't, and that's just a great shot.
No, Grunenbaum got a very good jump on the ball. It was just hit too well. I mean, it was a fantastic finish by Bustos on that. Mm-hmm. No chance for Grunenbaum to really save that with how well placed it was.
Absolutely, and boy, when Peter Vermees makes solid, smart signings like Tony Doval, got a brace for you guys in both the 69th and 76th minute. But that second goal, it caught Carvajal a little bit napping. He was on the right side of the line, but still caught him napping, and he just basically powers it past the far post.
No, that third goal was a factor of Saprissa really trying to push to get themselves another equalizer. That came off of a quick counter between Zuzi and Dom, and really Dom got a nice little cross right in the area where he couldn't come to claim it, and Failhaber got a bit of a touch, and Tony was unmarked at the back post to put that away.
Yeah, absolutely. On that third goal. But that second goal I was talking about, you know, he ripped one just inside the area. And it's like I was saying before, Carvajal was on the right side of the goal line, but he just was caught napping because that was a hell of a shot for the second for the 2-1.
Yeah.
But go ahead on that one.
Sorry, you said second goal, and I started assuming you were talking about
second. That's okay. It's okay. Don't worry about that. I misled you. That's my bad. I'll take the $10 fine.
No, the Tony's first goal was a thing of beauty. I mean, going back to the start of the play, Zuzi had just a beautiful cross-field ball there. And really, he was hitting those a lot last night. But that one, Julial got a really nice touch on that to knock it back in the middle. And really, nobody closed Tony down, and he took it right out of the air, caught him napping, and he couldn't get enough of a hand on it to keep it out.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to say, it looked like in this particular game, Sporting Kansas City could have made it 5-1, 6-1, just some great shots. If not stopped by Carvajal, you know, they should have gone in, a couple of near misses just inches away from the post. I know Sporting Kansas City is off the schneid in league play, but still, do you see some problems with Sporting right now that, I mean, you're a little worried that they might drop their current position in the East?
I am still a little worried with not really with the finishing for the most part. I mean, Dom had a couple chances in the first half that he missed or that were well saved. But I mean, he's going to get his chances, and given that he gets enough during the game, he's going to punish somebody if they give him enough chances. So finishing, I'm not really worried about that much.
Mm-hmm.
I was more impressed with the fact that the defense looked a lot better against Saprissa than it had been during the losing streak. I mean, you had Colin absolutely controlling Rodriguez, the Saprissa forward who scored all their goals coming into this game. I mean, Rodriguez was beyond frustrated by the second half with not getting calls and Colin just being all over him that entire time. So Colin looked more like the defender that we saw earlier in the year. And Beasler stepped up his play. Julial looked very impressive defensively, which for him might be about average defensively. But, I mean, he's looking better. He's looking more comfortable back there, which is more than what he was doing earlier this season.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think they're starting to piece it all back together in the run of play. And, of course, you know, when they get their chances, they will finish it. And to me, it looks all right. But so far in your group, in Group 2, Sporting Kansas City ahead on goal difference with plus 2. Saprissa, of course, plus 1 and behind. You still have two more matches left, a home against Real Esteli of Nicaragua this coming Wednesday, Thursday. And then you have the road match at Saprissa on October the 23rd. I guess the question is, if you get a fantastic result against Esteli and you get more goals scored, obviously, you're probably in the driver's seat to qualify out of the group.
No, we absolutely are. I mean, a win against Esteli puts us 3 points clear of Saprissa with that last game, and with the tiebreakers the way they are, basically after last night, all we need is a one goal loss, or basically to keep them from scoring the tiebreakers, if I remember right, are head to head points.
Yep.
And then it's, I believe it's goal scored, or is it goal difference between the two teams?
I think it's goal difference first, and then it's goal scored.
Okay. So yeah, the big thing would be a 1-0 loss or a one goal loss in Costa Rica would allow us to advance even with a loss down there. So a win against Esteli is going to have to be another must, in my opinion, because I'm not sure with the way the league schedule breaks down for us headed into that Costa Rica game.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know we finish against you guys at the end of the season.
Yes.
So I don't want to have to go into Saprissa needing a win or needing a draw to absolutely 100% guarantee advancement.
Right. Absolutely. Don't blame you how you feel about that. It's really crazy how this CONCACAF Champions League schedule has been intertwined with the current MLS schedule towards the back end, obviously. Red Bulls resting a lot of players against Montreal at home at Stade Saputo. Amazingly, they come out losing but only conceding one goal, and they're doing well so far if you think about it, goal difference-wise. And then here's Sporting Kansas City now in the top of the group, and now you just need to go out and probably have a much better performance against Real Esteli, who really hasn't – they really have been tough, but not tough enough.
Yeah, they're looking better than they did last year when we played them in the Champions League, but it's still a team that we should take care of business. There's nothing that I've seen from them that tells me that we shouldn't win this one by a couple goals. Of course, I said that last year, and we ended up tying them at home.
So. I know. I remember you were really upset. I've never seen you, or at least heard you, be so upset over what performance that Sporting Kansas City put out there against the side. And let's be honest, I mean, if Real Esteli is one of the top sides in Nicaragua in their first division, then to be honest, you know, Sporting Kansas City should have had their way with them. At home, especially.
Yeah, absolutely. We should have, and we're going to have to do that on Tuesday. The question is going to be what type of lineup we're going to field against them, because not only do we have Esteli on Tuesday, we then have a Friday night national TV game against the Revolution coming up next week as well. So I expect Vermes is going to rest a few of the. More played hands in that game against Esteli, and hope that the likes of Bieler and Sapong can do it offensively for us.
Absolutely. I definitely agree with you there, and I really believe that's the way Peter Vermes has been playing his hand so far in both league and Champions League-wise around this time of year. Kearney, thanks again, and I will talk to you next week as usual. Talk to you soon. Good luck against the rest of the league season, as well as taking on Esteli next week.
Sounds good, Daniel. Look forward to it.
All right, bye-bye.
That is Mike Kuhn once again from Down the Byline blog, talking about Sporting Kansas City and what they need to do to try and get out of the group stage and move on into the knockout round to face off whoever their quarterfinal opponent will be. And as we keep talking here, once again, this is the Four Your Scenes Fire American Soccer Show. The 2014-15 CONCACAF Champions League Group Stage Round 4 Review Show, as we discuss everything going on from within CONCACAF, and pardon me, in this CONCACAF Champions League going on. And you just got to say it's been very interesting the way that the schedule has been laid out there between MLS games and these CONCACAF Champions League games. It should be very interesting and a lot of fun. It's going to be exciting to see, that is for sure. And as we continue in counting down, we're going to go and talk a little Montreal, New York Red Bull action. Now, obviously, the New York Red Bulls, with a big home game against the Seattle Sounders tomorrow night, this coming Saturday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 4:30 p.m. Pacific, and that will be on NBC Sports Network. This is a match the Montreal Impact really needed to solidify their ascension going into the knockout round, because obviously they're in dead last in the Eastern Conference and they have nothing to play for in league action. That's why they're in the CONCACAF Champions League, and that is why that they had to really put their stamp on how they were going to get out of this group. Club Deportivo FAS, dead in the water. Three matches in, three matches out, one more to go, but it doesn't matter. It's all fodder for the New York Red Bulls. But the Red Bulls, unfortunately, had to sit the majority of their starters down, not because they are giving up on the Champions League, but because the players are battered and bruised and needed to replenish themselves. You can see at the end of that match, if you're a Red Bull supporter, at Philadelphia, over at PPL Park, they were running out of gas. Petke had no choice but to do what he had to do. But this is where it's now in favor of the Red Bulls, because the players, you want to call it a B team, you want to call it a C team, that's fine. But the New York Red Bulls did what they had to do. Mike Petke did what he had to do. And you know what? They may have lost, but in all honesty, they won. They only conceded one goal, and Montreal just could not bounce or power that ball past Ryan Mera more than once. They only got one goal. They may be a plus three on the differential, and the Red Bulls are right now at a plus one, but that's right now a victory in the eyes of the Red Bulls. Joining me, of course, we take the conversation, Monsieur Dominic Tremblay from Soccer Newsday, my compadre at Soccer Newsday, and here's what we had to say about this matchup.
And welcome back to the CONCACAF Champions League Group Stage Review Show, Round 4. Joining me, of course, my partner at Soccer Newsday, covering everything Montreal Impact, is Monsieur Dominic Tremblay. Dom, thanks a lot for coming back, and wow, what a game.
What a game. Sadly, only one goal on Montreal's side. But a win's a win. I think the 3 points. But maybe in the end, a lack of finishing in front of the net will bite us.
Wow. I got to tell you, though, even the goal's a little controversial, because there are some people, I know there are some people that are watching the game in New York, in the New York City area, saying that DeVayo, as always, you know, he likes to mess around with the offside trap. He likes to try to see if he can edge that button, wants to be on that edge, push that button to stay onside as long as he could, which it looks like he did, just stayed onside feet-wise, and he was able to convert past Ryan Mera, but that's a great goal.
Yeah, we have to live by what the referee said, and the linesman said that DeVayo was onside. And he had the mind to put it in the net at the end. It was a tight angle, but he was able to put it in.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, as big of a win as it was for Montreal, obviously, and, you know, getting any type of 3 points is wonderful. I think you know as well as I do, goal differential is huge in the CONCACAF Champions League. And no matter how many opportunities Montreal had, you just could not put it away. I mean, this is a game that Montreal really needed to put, some are saying it, a team that Mike Petke put out there. They had to score more than one, and that's just a disappointing result in a certain way.
Yeah, especially at home. You know, Montreal Impact tries to say that they're a home team, that they have a fortress at Stade Saputo, and that they're hard to beat, but It's kind of true because they won, but we need really more goals than one goal, because right now the goal difference, I think, is there's two goals difference. So if New York goes to CD Fast and win 3-0, which is possible, then we're down the goal, and a tight game still qualifies the Montreal Impact, but nothing is done in New York.
Absolutely, because right now you've already played your three full games so far. One more game in October, obviously, at Red Bull Arena. But to see Montreal, and this is, of course, from last year. You were in the same group with the San Jose Earthquakes. You had a 1-1 draw at home against the Earthquakes, and then there was another game in the same group. I forgot the name of the club, but you had a 1-0 victory back at Saputo Stadium, Stade Saputo, pardon me. Doesn't it feel like a loss when you can only muster a goal in all of your home games, in these four home games in the Champions League?
It is. Like I said, especially for a team who tries to say that they are very strong at home and that it's important to go and support your team because they're good and they're going to win. But we know, like you said, that goal differential plays a big part in the qualification process in the Champions League. And so far, it seems that it's going to be, once again, that number is going to make the difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to talk about New York Red Bull side, though, I mean, you have to be fortunate enough that, A, Richard Eckersley's header, or the slight touch off his head, did not go in. Great save by Bush. And then, of course, Ian Christensen, I mean, that free kick was just absolutely unbelievable. If that would have gone in, boy, I'm telling you, I think every Impact fan would have been very upset, because that would have been I mean, you're still upset because you only got one goal out of this match, but still, if this match would have been a 1-1 draw, forget about it. I mean, that would not really settle at all with everyone up in Montreal for this.
Yeah, exactly. Evan Bush was really good in the first half yesterday. We've seen him have some lapses, although some not that good goals. But yesterday he was there and he was really important, and he deserved at least 2 of the 3 points.
Yeah, absolutely. But right now, this has been Montreal's, I think this is your third season in Major League Soccer. You had Jesse Marsh to open up the MLS inaugural season. Then you had Schellenbaum last year, 1 year, who had a great start. Unfortunately, you sputtered at the end into going into the playoffs against Houston. And now you have Frank Klopas, where it's really been a lot of miss, not a lot of hits. What is it right now about Montreal that everyone is not happy about? Because in my opinion, I think you've got a team that should at least contend to get into a deep playoff run.
Well, that's what most fans believe, that we have a decent team. And you look at on the paper, there's decent guys there. But there's no, I don't know if it's a lack of chemistry. I don't know if it's a lack of finishing up front. DiVaio was on a cold streak early this season. Jack McInerney was able to score some goals. And then the roles reversed. Now DiVaio is the one scoring goal, and McInerney is nowhere to be found because even when he's on the field, we don't see him. So it's, I don't know, the arrival of Piatti helps on that matter because the guy is really good. He knows how to play ball. So now we just need to find something that clicks. Like you said, try to find more hits than miss.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's really been strange one at best. Now let's go to the referee's decision. I think we can admit the referee was bad for both teams. And once again, we don't really want to bring out the terminology of course we all know what it is called, CONCACAF. But still, the referee tonight, or the referee for the match that night, was just absolutely atrocious with his card decision. I mean, look, granted, Connor Lade got double yellow and sent off. You can admit, though, I mean, at least clean tackles by Lade, especially the second one, which, studs were down, got the ball, and I think both players kind of collided at the same time.
Yeah, second yellow to Connor Lade was really harsh. I did not complain as a Montreal fan. However, like you said, the refereeing has been difficult since the beginning of this tournament, the CONCACAF Champions League. We'll see how that goes. We've seen other editions in the past. We've seen how the refereeing was. So now we just need to wait and see how this one will go.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, it's going to be tough when you have Matteo Ferrari, who's booked, and of course now will be suspended for the last match in the group stage against the Red Bulls in October for a yellow card accumulation, as well as Marco DiVaio. He'll be suspended for that final game at Red Bull Arena end of October. Is it now a difficult hill to climb because you know the Red Bulls have to go back to El Salvador to face FAS, and if they get a favorable result, you two our sides are going to have to face each other at Red Bull Arena for the last match in the group stage.
Yeah, next game, New York at El Salvador, will be a very important one in this group. I'm sure many fans in Montreal will be checking that one with a close eye.
Yeah, absolutely. Other than that, Dominic, just absolutely got to say, it's just been a real tough season for Montreal. And unfortunately, while, like I said before, you got the 3 points, and that's obviously important, but not to add on with the goal difference, that really does hurt. And that gives New York an opportunity to at least pounce on the final group stage game after what's going to happen next Wednesday down in El Salvador.
Yeah, we need to Montreal really needs to either win or tie in New York in October. It's going to be hard because I'm pretty sure that if you guys go to Salvador and get a good result, I'm pretty sure that Mike Petke will try to line up guys like Henri and Tim Cahill and Mike Phillips, who wasn't there yesterday. So I'm pretty sure that they're going to go all in if they see a possibility to reach the next round.
Absolutely. Dom, thanks a lot for the time. I always appreciate it, and I will talk to you in October.
Thank you for having me, Daniel.
No problem at all.
Dominic Tremblay up in Montreal talking about the impact. As once again, it's a 1-0 victory for Montreal, but that type of win can be a loss if the Red Bulls do take advantage against Club Deportivo FAS this coming Wednesday night. And, of course, for American viewers, that will be on Fox Soccer Plus for the New York Red Bulls at 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific time. And, you know, once again, Montreal, as terrible as they have looked in league play, just not converting more than a goal is hurting them, because you've seen what they can do. They have the players to become very dangerous, solid, and then all of a sudden they only score a goal and they just can't score another one at home. And they're normally dominant at home. I don't know what's going on, to be honest and to be fair. It's a situation where the New York Red Bulls, or shall I say the Montreal Impact, gave the New York Red Bulls an out. But while I'm saying that, the New York Red Bulls C team played extremely well. They defended well, fine. They had that one little cough up that gave Montreal the goal. But they defended well. They attacked well. They had great chances from set pieces. Obviously, Bush was there to make the saves. But if the Red Bulls nicked the goal, telling you right now, they definitely would have made everyone in Montreal a lot more upset than probably what they were showing after the 90 minutes were up. Because I'm telling you right now, Montreal had plenty of opportunities to bury their chances, and they just could not do it. They just could not do it, and this is going to bite them in the rear end. This is the type of performance where Montreal should have had 3 goals, 4 goals, maybe even 5 goals on a C team New York Red Bulls that had no Tim Cahill, no Thierry Henry, no Bradley Wright Phillips. They had Dax McCarty. They had Eric Alexander on the bench. They had Roy Miller on the bench. They had Sagaya on the bench. They had a lot of people on the bench. And here are these players getting opportunities, getting 90 minutes or less, but still, they played fantastic. Mike Petke at the end of the game said, being interviewed by a local reporter, said basically this was the best loss they've ever played in because they had great performances and they only conceded a goal. One goal was conceded. This is an opportunity now for the New York Red Bulls to go down to El Salvador after Saturday's game at home against Seattle, go down to El Salvador, and basically score as many chances as possible, blitz the net, burn it down, put in 5, put in 6, put in 7, put in 8. You got to go down there. You got to take care of your business, and you got to go, and you have to take them out and score as many times as possible. They may be home, FAS. They may be playing at home. But this is one of those types of games where you cannot allow the officials to run you and take you out of your game plan. The double yellow card on Connor Lade, both fouls were ridiculous. and they were not clear-cut fouls, nor were they bookable offenses. So all I can say is Connor Lade got thrown out for nothing, unfortunately, but that's what goes on in this league. Or shall we say in this confederation of CONCACAF, because these referees are absolutely horrible. All right, now we're going to move on here. We're going to talk about the Portland Timbers, their first home match in the CONCACAF Champions League against Olimpia of Honduras, and it was a 4-2 victory over Olimpia as we get ready to chat with a good buddy of mine once he gives us a call, Stephen Lenhart, over at the 5 Minutes to Kickoff podcast, covering everything Portland Timbers. So just waiting for him to give us a call to see what's going on and talking about the Timbers as we get ready to go, get ready to see what's going to happen. Of course, you know what? They played great. Not a bad first half, even though Olimpia was threatening to not just equalize, even though they equalized twice, but to try and take a lead. But Portland at home, of course, very strong, very, very comfortable at Providence Park, and they take a 2-goal advantage as they get ready to move on for their next match. And joining me now, Stephen Lenhart from the 5 Minutes to Kickoff podcast over in Portland. What's going on, Steve?
Oh, I'm doing good. I'm hanging out in the bar having a nice beer right now. I hope the music isn't too loud for your listeners out there.
The music's not too loud, but you hang out at any bar, let's be honest.
Yeah, this one's a special one. This one's a nice Belgian bar here in Portland, so.
Oh, okay, yeah. Actually, I know there's a great Belgian place in New York, actually. They got 3 locations, great mussels and fries, man. It's awesome. But, that's a big win for the Timbers heading into back at home against Olimpia. Of course, that's probably going to be your main opponent that will give you fits when you go down to Honduras, but that was a very exciting match, and I got to say the Timbers looked solid after the first 45 minutes.
Yeah, definitely. It was that second half. I mean, I think it's been proven all year that the Timbers really missed Rodney Wallace because he was out at the beginning of the season because of that injury he picked up at the end of last year, and once he got inserted into the lineup because Khalif had to come out, it just opened up everything, changed everything. Running down the wings, and then, of course, Rudy doing what he's doing right now, scoring goals.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? Those were some very good goals. I was watching it on Fox Sports 1. Urruti, of course, with a brace. He scored that fantastic shot in the 11th minute to give Portland the early lead. Of course, Olimpia comes back on a fantastic free kick. And then here comes Will Johnson, of course, your captain, playing extremely well all season long, especially now in the Champions League. And, boy, Urruti's been a fine pickup for you guys.
Yeah, I guess we got to thank Toronto for that one and firing their general manager last year, and we were able to pick him up because their new guy didn't care for him so much, I guess. But, yeah, it's been a great pickup for the Timbers. But, I mean, actually, you say Will Johnson's been fantastic all year. Actually, I think, that's been a lot of criticism, I think, is that Will Johnson hasn't played up to how he did last year. But in this game, he definitely played to the level that he did last year. And then also at the Vancouver match up in Vancouver when the Timbers just recently won 3-0, that was a solid effort by Johnson. So it shows he's struggled a bit this year, and then when he has played a little bit better, the team's been a little more successful. So I think the key, I know this is the Champions League talk, but, I mean, going into this coming up weekend, too, is seeing if Will Johnson can sustain another good game.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, what was it about Olimpia, though, that kind of worried you a little bit? Because, obviously, you're going to go down there later on in the schedule, which, of course, their home is a house of horrors for anyone that's visiting Olimpia's stadium. But what was it about Olimpia that gave you some worries that maybe the Timbers are going to have their hands full in this home match over at Providence Park?
Well, you know, I think going into it, I think the game played out way different than I was thinking was going to happen. I thought it was going to be more of a frustrating night for the Timbers, where Olympia was going to play much tighter. I thought it was going to be more of a battling for a 1-1 draw type thing, or going for a nil-nil. The game was much more open than I thought it would be. I guess maybe that's partly to do with the back line that the Timbers have, is that they, you know, regardless of who they're playing, they're always going to give up a goal. So it's always going to be more of an open game, I guess. But the game, as far as how it played out, I thought it was going to be way more frustrating, and I thought that, you know, Olympia was going to be using every trick in the book. And it didn't really play that way. And, I mean, I guess credit to Olympia because that happened that way, but also at the same time I was quite surprised. I thought that maybe they would have had more success if they would have tried to frustrate the Timbers a lot more.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I really do, because you never know when you have a side like Olympia that's done so well in Central America that they could find a way to sneak one in past you. But still, once again, Timbers came out with a brilliant game plan. Of course, Caleb Porter doing a great job with his substitutions. Talk about this kid. Obviously, I know you talked about him before, but Roshan McKenzie, obviously from the Timbers Academy, and he gets his first goal, especially in a big match, in the CONCACAF Champions League match. What is special about him? And just talk about how great how he scored that goal to make it 4-2.
Well, Rashard McKenzie, I don't know if he's necessarily from the Timbers Academy, but he was on loan earlier in the season. I don't know, he's a center back that came in there, and, you know, he's been more of a guy that just kind of fills in when the team has played some U.S. Open Cup matches and played, you know, in the Champions League match here and also down in Guyana. But, you know, I mean, I guess it just shows that, you know, when he's called upon, he's able to put in a pretty good performance. I guess getting a goal is just kind of a bonus type of thing, because, you know, the Timbers, you know, are struggling to keep the ball out of the net. So, you know, I guess the only way you can counter that is by having center back score goals. So, I think it was nice to see him pop up and score a goal there, and, you know, play a solid game when he was called upon. You know, the lineup was a bit shifted compared to what they've normally played. I would say it was a much stronger lineup than what they sent down to Guyana earlier in the Champions League. So I think to get those results was good. I think it's a little bit tough, though, giving up that goal that Weber did. You know, you kind of want to have a 3-point spread going down to Honduras. But overall, I think the performance was it was half in the stadium for sure, because we haven't seen a lot of those this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Do agree with you there on what's going on. Well, other than that, taking a look at the standings right now for Portland, obviously at the moment Olympia, which, of course, Portland does have a game in hand or two games in hand right now. Olympia now is ahead on one goal scored. Obviously, both of you have 6 points total. You both are on +5 on the differential, but Olympia has 9 scored, and Portland has 8 scored, so they have the one-plus advantage right there. And then Portland's going to be home to Alpha United, and I believe that'll be a whipping, obviously, because Alpha United,
yeah,
you whipped them down there, and you're going to whip them up here, let's be honest. We're not going to sugarcoat anything. But that last group stage game in October going down to Honduras, I mean, that's all for the marbles right there.
Yeah, that one's going to be the big one, and it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out as far as what kind of team they send down there, because it's sandwiched in between the second to last and the last game of the season in MLS, and, you know, the Timbers are right there in the thick of things for the fifth spot, so maybe by that time they'll know if they're out of the playoff situation or not. So that might change what they send down there, but as far as I've seen what the tiebreakers are for the Champions League, it looks like it's all going to come down to that, to the goal differential head-to-head against Olympia. So You know, even if we beat Alpha United 1-0 at Portland, it's not really going to affect what happens in that last match, as far as what I've seen in the tiebreaker. So, you know, we beat Olympia by 2 goals in Portland, and but they scored 2 away goals. So those are the tiebreakers right there. So it's a matter of if we can, you know, if we do lose, that we lose less than 2 goals, or if we or scored more than 2, you know, on the road. So I don't know. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how that all kind of plays out, because it's really going to be determined by what's going on in MLS play.
Absolutely. Before I let you go, I asked my correspondent from D.C. about the new logo for next year for Major League Soccer. What's your opinion about it, yay or nay?
Well, that's is that a trick question? I don't know. I don't know. I guess it remains to be seen how they use it, because obviously they have that open space there, and there's going to be, I know I've seen some things drifting around where that might be used with the logo for the teams and stuff like that. I guess the one criticism that I have is that they said they kind of pulled the influence from the TIFO that was made for the Timbers Army and the American Outlaws when they had the match here in Portland for the Gold Cup, and it was like the club country and community club country type of thing. So using the stars on there, I thought was, I don't know, I don't like when MLS kind of markets U.S. national team stuff with their league, and I guess that's my only biggest criticism.
That's fine. You know, more than, you know, that's how you feel. You know, there's no right or wrong. It's whatever your opinion is,
I don't blame you how you feel. I don't know what popular opinion is with your listeners, but I don't know. It just kind of rubs me a little bit wrong when there's a little bit of promotion with the MLS with the U.S. national team, because there is some teams in Canada that are in our league. There's also a huge market of CONCACAF, I guess, you know, people from CONCACAF countries that live in the United States that the U.S. really needs as fans. So when you start to kind of overlap that, it kind of, you know, why would you want to be supporting your local team when it's kind of, you know, crossover like that, when you're from, say, a first generation kid from Mexico or, you know, Jamaica or wherever they're from.
Yeah, I understand what you're talking about. I hear you. Definitely. All right, so listen, Stephen, enjoy your beer, take it easy, and I'll talk to you next week. Take care now.
Okay, thanks, kid, for talking.
Yay, same here. That's Stephen Lenhart from the 5 Minutes to Kickoff podcast. Of course, Nevitz over there in the Pacific Northwest. Quickly, let's just quickly give you the television schedule for the round 5 of the group stage here in the CONCACAF Champions League next week, Tuesday night, September 23rd, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Sporting Kansas City at home against Real Esteli on Fox Sports 1. Also on Fox Sports 1, Portland Timbers against Alpha United, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific. On Wednesday, September the 24th, D.C. United at home against Taro FC. That's on Fox Sports 2, 8 p.m. Eastern. And then at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific, the New York Red Bulls on the road at Club Deportivo FAS on Fox Soccer Plus. So check your local listings and the number of the channel that it will be on. Locally here, Optimum for Tuesday will be on Channel 69. And for Wednesday, Channel 403 for Fox Sports 2, Channel 631 for Fox Soccer Plus. So we'll see what's going to happen there going on there and when you want to watch it. Now, hopefully, we'll have on my good buddy, John Jagu, talking about Liga MX clubs. And, of course, he's right off the bat ready to go. John Jagu from Big Soccer covers Liga MX and the Mexican national team. John, good evening, and how are you, sir?
Hey, Daniel, I am doing great. It's we've gotten a lot of rain down here, so.
Oh, really?
We desperately need it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, great. That's wonderful to hear.
Yeah, so, and I actually have a weekend off for the first time in I don't know how long, so I'm looking forward to that, too.
You are the busiest man in Austin, that's for sure.
I wish that were the case, but it's just, I'm doing I'm announcing for the Longhorns in Spanish, and they have an off week this weekend, so.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what I'm going to do with myself tomorrow. It's been a while since I've been at home on Saturdays.
All I can say is I think you should just go ahead. If you have a pool in the backyard, pull out the lawn chair, get yourself a beer, and just sit back and relax.
That sounds like a good idea.
There we go. Speaking about a good idea, if you're going to double down, Club America was going to destroy Bayamón FC down in Puerto Rico, and they added four more than the last result over at the Estadio Azteca. You should have put money down on that.
Yeah, that was quite the – I mean, I think it was after 15 minutes they were already up 4-0. It was I kind of feel bad for Bayamón because, I guess people were – me included, were thinking, well, the Islanders seem to have a pretty good run in the Champions League. I mean, they almost made it to the final one year. So, maybe this team will be the same. And, unfortunately, they had a bad night, obviously, and Club America just went in there. Had a couple of guys had hat tricks, and, by the end of it, they'd rung up a 10th spot on them. And, now Club America has another home game to round out the group. And, like I've told you before, if that's a team that's in on all cylinders, then, I would have to say that they would probably be the favorites to win the whole thing if they made it through. And it looks like they're going to make it through with relative ease.
Yeah,
with
absolutely.
Their home game against Comunicaciones, so I don't think they'll have any issue. And, they looked the part. I mean, they really did look good. Aside from the fact that they're playing a weak team, they asserted themselves, right away, and they just... they stomped them. There's no other way to put it. It was, around here they opened up a can of whoop ass. It looked like they tapped a whoop ass keg. It was pretty ugly.
You better believe it was. Oh my God, Luis Rey with the first half hat trick, third minute, fifth minute, and then in the 35th minute. Even Il Barón got his tally in the fourth. Gonzalo Diaz in the 14th, and obviously Martin Zuniga wanted to join the hat trick party with his own in the 42nd, 58th, and 87th. And I see also the substitution of Emilio Sanchez. He gets a brace. Let's admit it. Club America did the right thing. If you're going to win, you win big against a team that you should handle fairly well.
Yeah, exactly. They did what you. I'm not saying that they're going to, that everyone's going to win 10-1, but they did what you would hope a team to do in that situation is to go in there and crush a team that is, let's face it, it's just not in their league, and not in many leagues. It wouldn't just be America that would be doing that to them. There's probably out of the 12 teams that are in this phase, or I guess 24 teams that are in this phase. I'm guessing, easily 16 or 17 teams could have probably done the same thing. It just goes to show you that, it might not be such a good idea to include, I don't want to belittle what Bayamón is, but, it may be that maybe what we need to do for CONCACAF is to have like a Caribbean tournament where it's more competitive for them, and then from those folks, like a club tournament from those folks, they can then advance into this Champions League. I don't know, but just it's scores like that are just are scandalous, and it doesn't make the Confederation look good, that's for sure. America fans were thrilled with it, but as a whole, I think that the Confederation was probably like, man, did you really have to put 10 on them? And I'm sure that they were a little uncomfortable with how the results turned out, but if Club America is given the opportunity, if they're just the other team's just letting them do it, however it is, then you got to do what you got to do. You can't let up. You got to you know, play to your style. And if you end up their style was giving the other team fits, then so be it. I mean, then you're going to lose 10-1, and that's what happened.
Absolutely. Talking about a side that really needed a result, Cruz Azul gets revenge on Chorrillo. They get basically three goals and a clean sheet as well from goalkeeper Jose Corona. Do you think they've done enough to save themselves? And when they play their last game away at Alajuelense, do you think they've done enough to maybe save themselves from being eliminated in the group? I know they're tied on points right now.
Right.
But
I'm not sure.
What's
the goal differential?
Well, right now, Azul is plus two. Alajuelense is plus one. Chorrillo's at minus three, and last.
Okay, so they have the goal differential. So if they can go to Costa Rica and get the tie, then they would advance.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, they've done enough. But I mean, I watched the game. I mean, they missed. I know I saw two penalties missed. I can't remember if they missed the third one or not. But it
mm-hmm.
was, you know, Cruz Azul should have won this game. You know, not 10-1 like America did, but they should have won 6 or 7-0.
Mm-hmm.
With they're just not playing well. I mean, they're not playing well in the league. They're not playing well in this tournament. I'm not sure if it's because they're thinking about going to Morocco and playing in the Club World Cup or whatever it is. But for just some reason, they just don't seem to have. There's just something that they're not making the connection. There's something missing. They're a team that's kind of lost right now. And I don't know. I mean, and I watched the game. And they're so close, and they're just missing that. You know, the pass is like a yard too far, or you know that they hit a shot that is, a little higher over the bar than should be, or maybe you know a little too close to the goalie or whatever it is. They just don't seem to have the wherewithal to get what they need. You know, obviously winning at home, is going to help them, and they can go to Costa Rica with the pressure on Costa Rica. I mean, you know, Cruz Azul is a team that has a coach that is very experienced. They have very experienced players. They have very dynamic players. You know, we're waiting. You know, sooner or later, the light's going to come on, but the light just hasn't come on yet, and it may be too late. I'm hoping for their sake that it does come on, because I would like to see them go to the Club World Cup to the point where, you know, they can at least be competitive. I mean, I think that they can certainly do that, but I mean, I would much rather see them, you know, go to the tournament where they've, you know, maybe made a run in the local league. Maybe they qualified for the knockouts in this tournament to give them just a little bit more confidence, because they just. It seems like that's all they're lacking. They just need to have that, you know, some of their, you know, I've always said that, you know, for teams that need confidence, you know, sometimes they need a little luck. And they've just been the unluckiest team. I mean, it's just brutal. I mean, you know, one guy, takes a penalty kick, totally fools the goalie, and it just barely misses the post. And then he does it again in the second half, and he hits the same shot. It's like,
oh.
You know, I mean, it's just little things like that. I mean, it's been killing them the whole season. So I think if they can just get luck on their side, you know, if the ball starts bouncing their way, then the Cruz Azul is the kind of team that has the players that the minute they get confidence, they're going to be a completely different team. So hopefully it happens for them, and it's going to be, if and when it does, and I hope that happens, you know, within the next couple of weeks, then I think that, you know, they'll handle their business down in Costa Rica. Hopefully they can get going in the league, and then they can make CONCACAF proud when they go play in Morocco in December.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll see what happens there. Right now, Leon in second place in Group 7, as Herediano replaced Balmopan Bandits, from Belize because of their stadium situation. I don't understand why a third Costa Rican team should have been picked. Maybe another Nicaraguan team, I would say, should have been picked, but that's just me, of course. Leon in second place, but they have two in hand, and the rest have one in hand. Club America, of course, leading Group 8. We already talked about Cruz Azul. Pachuca will be playing their last two games next week and, of course, in October. They're leading the Group 1, with 6 points, plus 7, while Municipal in second with a minus 1, and Real España in last with minus 6. In your mind, or maybe even in your heart as well, out of those four, do do you feel maybe three of the four advance? Because it doesn't sound like you sound confident with Cruz Azul advancing.
Well, like I said, I mean, I think Cruz Azul will advance just because, I mean, I think that sooner or later things are going to start happening for them in a positive way. And so they're not going to play their next game until October,
the
I
October
guess, right?
Week. Cause, then they'll be at Costa Rica, at Alajuela.
Right. So, I mean, so they've got, you know, 2 or 3 weeks to, you know, hopefully, you know, just get some results going their way. So I think that, you know, I think that it's going to happen for them. I think that eventually it's going to happen. The team that I'm not too sure about qualifying, and I think that, you know, we'll see how it goes, is León, because they have just, I mean, they have just had a terrible, terrible league. I mean their defense, you know, when you lose a guy like Rafa Márquez, it's going to affect your team. They lost Luis Montes, you know, earlier in June, and they're just not the same team. I mean, they're a team that looks completely lost, and I don't know if they're going to be able to get it back. I think that if a crazy thing to say, you know, a team that's won the league the last 2 years, you think that they would have no problem, but it just goes to show you just how finicky and how bizarre the Mexican league is, you know, that a team that's done that well the last couple of years just could find themselves in the wilderness like León is. I mean they've lost. I mean, their defense is the worst in the league and in the local league. They've lost just game after game. They were lucky to tie at Aviano the last time they played. I mean, very lucky to tie them. The last time they played in the Champions League, I mean, they got an 85th minute goal, and sadly, they came real close to stealing the game, which I don't think they would have deserved, but they did do that. And it's so weird because they have such an unbelievably passionate fan base. They have a front office that supports the team, you know, as well as any front office in Mexico. You know, they do a good job of finding players and, you know, and letting players go, et cetera, if they have the opportunity. So it's just, I don't know if they got caught where maybe they were a little complacent and they thought, this will be a cakewalk for us. But they just haven't seemed to, you know, that's another team that just hasn't found the right combination. And I think that they're missing some leaders, and I think that they haven't filled the void yet. And the other thing is that the other guy that was, you know, really their heart and soul, the team, Carlos Peña, Hulit is what they call him. He's been in a slump ever since before the World Cup even started. I mean, he was slated to be the starting right midfielder in the World Cup, or left midfielder in the World Cup, and he went into a terrible slump. And full credit to Coach Herrera, he realized that's, you know what, I can't play this guy because we're gonna have problems. So he ended up replacing him with Guardado, who had a fantastic World Cup. You know, so obviously, the move worked out for coach and player, but for a guy like Hulit, who, you know, 2 years before was playing in the second division, it's, I don't know if I'm saying it was a bitter pill to swallow, but I think it's something that he just hasn't quite come to terms with, and it's reflected in his play. You know, he's a guy that when he's on, I mean, he is as probably the best midfielder that plays in Liga MX. I mean, the dude is really good, but he's been in an awful slump over the past 4 or 5 months or so, since before the World Cup even started. And I mean, and they need, you know, he's the guy that needs to, you know, if he can get going, then I think León changes course. And he's the guy that needs to be that leader. I mean, you know, players are looking to him. Hey, man, you need to lead us. And it's not that he's not trying. I mean, he is trying. So hopefully, if he can get. I mean, they do have the two games in hand, which, I mean, let's face it, they're both winnable games. I mean, it's not like Cruz, you know, it's not like León can't beat these teams. They can easily beat the teams. And then Pachuca, I don't think they have any problems at all. I mean, they're just a fun team to watch. They're a young team, very dynamic. They had a couple injuries. They got guys coming back now. They sold Valencia, who had a great World Cup for Ecuador, to West Ham for 20 million pounds. So they got some, you know, fresh cash where they could go, and they brought in some other, you know, some other nice, decent South American talent that they've been able to just keep on going. And they, you know, they have in good standing in the league. They had a great first couple of rounds in the Champions League. They just slaughtered off. I think it was Real España by scoring 6 goals away, which is, you know, pretty hard to do down in Central America. They had no issue with that. And they're just, I don't think they'll have any problem moving into the next round. And they're definitely going to be a team to watch, I think. But I do think, though, out of the – if you know, I think America will go and Pachuca will go. Cruz Azul may go. I think León is a team that's really, I would consider maybe a less than 50% chance of advancing. I think I would put Cruz Azul about 65. So it could be that there'll only be two teams out of the four from Mexico that advance into the next round, which obviously would make things a lot easier for the MLS sides to finally, you know, get in position to maybe win this thing.
Absolutely. John, thank you so much, and I'll talk to you next week. Take care. Enjoy your time off.
Hey, Daniel, it's my pleasure, and whatever you do, Daniel, this weekend, do not call a timeout when your quarterback throws a touchdown.
I never do. It's always my friend next to me.
All right.
And I yell at him. Thanks a lot, John. Take care.
It's my pleasure, Daniel. Bye.
All right, bye-bye. And that's John Jagu, and that's the end of the show. I'll talk to you guys on Monday for the Fire American Soccer Show. And we'll talk to you next Friday, another round of the CONCACAF Champions League Group Stage Review Show. Daniel Feuerstein here saying, as always, enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good night, everybody.